Hi, horses. I'm here with Professor J. Michael Bailey to talk about rapid onset gender dysphoria and whatever else we may talk about. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure.
Okay.
So I am a professor of psychology at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois, outside of Chicago. I've been an academic in this department since 1989. I've specialized mainly in studying sexual orientation and have branched out a bit to related phenomena, including gender dysphoria and paraphilias, which are unusual sexual interests outside of the typical, you know, I like men, I like women thing. And these are all related. You know, there are certain sexualities that are more common among certain kinds of gender dysphoria and so on.
Okay. I'll just say, going into this, my audience, I'm an artist, I guess. And so my audience are mostly fans of me, which I guess may be true of most podcasts. But I talk to a lot of academics and often psychologists, and I have a degree in psychology. But they're probably interested in seeing how we bounce off of each other. If that makes sense.
Sure. you know, so it's maybe more like a conversation than an interview.
Yeah.
That's fine with me.
Also, a lot of them are probably already sold on the idea of ROGD, including myself. Okay. I have some challenges to make to your work.
Good.
Okay. So my first question is, will you define female?
Female.
So before we start talking about this stuff, it feels like there's so much, you know, ambiguity now about what things mean.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I don't really think there's that much ambiguity about female. I think to the extent that people say there is ambiguity, they're being difficult. Female is the sex that is not male. And, you know, in the human species, young females are called girls, and then they become young women, and then they become women.
Okay, and, well, then can you define male?
Male is the species that is not, I'm sorry, the sex that is not female.
Well, so how do we...
biologically speaking, which, we don't use these biological definitions in day-to-day life, but...
Okay.
In mammals...
But this is like a scientific conversation.
Yeah,
day-to-day life.
Okay, fine. In mammals, the male is the sex with the Y chromosome, and the female is the sex with two X chromosomes. But, you know, the mechanism that causes sexual development in a male typical or male, in a female typical way is less in the chromosome and genes than in the hormones. And the male development is caused by having lots of male hormones before birth and after birth, whereas female sexual development is mainly caused by the absence of the male hormones before birth, and then later female hormones like estrogen play an increasing role.
Okay. All right, so we're going to XXXY and then hormones.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you know, people did fine with male and female and man and woman for thousands of years before we knew about genes and chromosomes without getting confused.
Well, sure. But, I mean, maybe we weren't doing fine. Maybe we were oppressing trans people. You know what I'm saying? We were doing fine for, I mean, like, we had slavery. Was that fine? Like, I just think that there's a...
I think we were doing fine. And, you know, there were these unusual people that were known about back then. And in fact, the... you probably heard the expression of a woman trapped in a man's body. Well, that phrase wasn't quite like that. It was the soul of a woman in a man's body was first invented by a feminine gay man. In the, I think it was the late 1800s, early 1900s, because, you know, gay men, on average, do tend to be somewhat feminine, and one kind of trans person could be thought of as a type of gay man.
Sure.
But, you know, what's important, you know, the word trans is over-inclusive in the sense that, let's say it's vague. There's more than one kind of trans person, and they're very different from each other.
Well, I'm still stuck on you saying we were doing fine, but it's haven't we been?
I haven't heard a good objection to why we weren't doing fine about talking about male and female.
Well, for example, like assigning intersex people a sex at birth, like if someone has a ambiguous genitalia, doing a surgery on the baby and then kind of just telling them that they're a girl or a boy, and then they go through life and their hormones are different from what they expected. Like, that's kind of horrible, right?
Intersex people... some types of intersex people are challenging, but they're also extremely rare. And it seems strange to me avoid very useful terms and ideas because of something that is one out of every 10,000 persons. It's like you know,
blind people
can't see colors. So does that mean we shouldn't talk about colors?
If it made a blind person, 1 in 10,000 blind people's dick get cut off, then maybe, I don't know, it would be worth at least talking about. I'm just it's not a perfect analogy, because there are people who fall through the cracks, and I think that the strength of a definition can be somewhat measured in how it handles edge cases. And
yeah, so I don't know that we're doing better these days about sex
cutting off dicks
than we used to.
Okay. I'm not saying I agree with you. I'm not saying we're doing better. I just, you know, I don't have such a rosy picture of back when men were men and women were women.
Well, I didn't say that.
Okay.
I just said that, you know, people have been able to talk and identify, you know, the vast majority of people in ways that the vast majority of people were comfortable with for many thousands of years. And, you know, the past, there are all kinds of problems, but I don't think that talking about men and women and male and female were among them.
I totally disagree with you.
Okay.
I totally disagree. I was thinking this reading the paper, where the parents are like, things were fine. My child and I had a, we were close on a 5.5 out of 6. They were intelligent. They were reasonably healthy, or they had some mental health issue, but basically we were good. And then all of a sudden, there's this, my daughter says she's a boy, and it's got to be that damned internet thing. And I just feel like there have to have already been a lot of chasm or cracks in the relationship for this chasm to form suddenly. And it feels like you're saying that the way, like, to me, that the trans craze is a sign that we haven't been handling gender very well.
Well, I don't agree. Okay. I think, you know, so rapid onset gender dysphoria is a new phenomenon.
Yeah.
And the people who seem to have, so it's controversial, and we're doing continued work to validate the concept, and maybe, you know, if it isn't a real thing, then we'll find that it's not. But I'm pretty sure it is. So I'm going to stop speaking in such a qualified way. I'm going to assume for now that rapid onset gender dysphoria, ROGD, does exist.
Bring it on. Okay, can I ask you another definition question? What is transgender? How to define transgender?
Well, I think transgender is kind of a murky thing, and it's more an identity that some people assume.
Okay. Well, here's,
they assume it for all kinds of different reasons.
Here's one issue I had with your paper. This is the paper that was published in Springer, and then
Archives of Sexual Behavior, which is published by Springer. Yeah.
Archives of Sexual Behavior, it was published in the spring of last year.
Yeah.
Is that correct? And it was retracted, not last year, this spring, and it was retracted this summer.
Yeah.
And the reason given for the retraction is that the respondents were not given informed consent because it was a informal survey done on a website that you took the data from after the fact and then analyzed.
Right.
Okay. Here's a quote from the paper. ROGD theory proposes that common cultural beliefs, values, and preoccupations cause some adolescents, especially female adolescents, to attribute their social problems, feelings, and mental health issues to gender dysphoria. That is, youth with ROGD falsely believe that they are transgender and that they must undergo social and medical gender transition to resolve their issues.
Yep.
So my issue with this is that I don't understand how you can falsely be transgender if transgender is a self-identification.
You make a reasonable point.
Thank you.
So I think
defend yourself.
Yeah, I think in that particular part of the paper, and I probably for the paper, we were using transgender as something meaningful, which. And I think that we were referring to it as a condition that has been previously recognized before the past 15 years, anyway, as being associated with gender transition and gender dysphoria.
Well, sure, but what is it?
Well, so I think transgender, If I got to choose the way words were used, I might define transgender as something that includes transsexuals, which is the word that we have used to refer to people who are either have gotten sex changes or intend to or really want to. But it could also include people who are like those, but are less sure, let's say, that they want to get sex changes. people on the same continuum, but closer to transsexuals than to typical people.
Okay, but these girls want sex changes.
They do, but they're not—they're not like transsexuals of the established literature. They're a new type of person. They have a new condition that we didn't ever
recognize.
But
wait a second. Wait a second. You said some trans men, trans women, some trans women are just gay. And some trans women are autogynephiles. They are attracted, right, sexually aroused by the idea of themselves as women. But they're both trans. They both get to be in the trans club, despite having totally different motivations for being trans. Yep. So why is it that these teenage girls are not allowed to be in the trans club? If the defining feature that makes somebody transsexual or transgender is that they want a sex change.
Yeah. The first two conditions, they don't go away, at least once people are adults. So autogynephilia doesn't go away. Feminine homosexuality.
But the identification as a woman could go away, even if the arousal at the idea does. Like, there are cross-dressers. Yeah. There are clearly people who just, right?
Yeah. So anyway, it is possible. I understand your point, and it's...
Yeah, couldn't you... You could have titled the paper, "We have a new, we've discovered a new type of trans person, everybody." These girls are rightfully trans, but they're getting there through a different path, or they have different motivations.
This is related to another point that I've gotten pushback on, and that is some people don't think that ROGD is really gender dysphoria, but I make the point that these people, I think, are mistaken about their own issues, but they do suffer because of their gender. And you, I guess, are making the point that they really want to be trans, so in a sense,
they are.
They are.
Unless you have a different definition of trans, excludes them.
And, you know, I think you're making a reasonable point, and I don't really want to, you know, push back hard on the point you're making.
Okay. Another quote. So my perspective is that trans people believe they are the opposite sex, falsely.
I don't think that's true. I don't think they believe they're the other sex. They want to be the other sex. That's different than believing. I think believing you're the other sex is kind of a delusion.
Yes, I don't think all of them are like I've spoken.
I think hardly any of them actually believe.
You don't think these girls think that they're really boys? I don't hear teenage girls now saying I want to live as a boy. They're saying I am a boy.
Well, I think I think that's partly strategic. It may be partly delusional. The trans people I know best are the other types, and
the reasonable ones.
None of the ones that I knew that I can think of anyway actually had that. None of them insisted that. Yeah, I'm really a woman. With the exception, I don't think I ever met any in real life, but I met through the internet some who would contact me and insist that they had some very unusual intersex condition that when I did further investigation, it didn't exist. And I believe these were autogynephilic males who really, really, really wanted to believe that they were women or that was delusional.
Okay, politically, you are aware that the party, or maybe you don't agree with this. My understanding is that the Progressive Party line is trans women are women.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot.
And on places really like, well, you may not care, but
I don't agree. You know, I mean,
no, I know you don't agree, but our point of contention is: do trans people believe that they are actually the opposite gender, or do they believe they're actually the opposite sex? I think I just saw a clip of John Oliver debating a trans woman about whether she's biologically female. So I think my perception is that the needle is much further along than your perception seems to be in terms of trans women literally actually being women and also female.
I think, you know, we should acknowledge that within any type of transgender person, there's variation in what people believe and say.
Mm-hmm.
There may be some who are pushing the, yes, I am really biologically female. Like, yeah, I think that, I forget who the cyclist is, who is male to female and competed as a woman before she was disallowed. Mm-hmm. But yes, I've seen her basically say, yeah, I'm a woman.
Yeah. So the reason I bring it up is that, when you, in the paper, if you refer to falsely believing you're trans, being trans is a false belief itself. So I don't know how you can really believe a false thing versus falsely believe a false thing. To me, it's all,
all false. Yeah, it's an interesting, you read it very carefully and you're making good points.
Thank you. Okay.
They believe this theory that, that some people are, one sex trapped inside the other.
Yeah.
And that they are instances of that.
It doesn't make any damn sense.
But it makes more sense for some people than for others. So, for example, do you know who Jazz Jennings is?
I do.
Well, you know, Jazz Jennings...
Jazz Jennings is trapped inside the wrong body.
even as a little boy, Jazz Jennings was extremely feminine and really yearned to be female, and it makes more sense to me to think of her, even though I don't think of her as a female trapped in a male's body, than it does one of the RGD cases. Go ahead.
What do you mean when you say it makes more sense to you to think of it that way, even though you don't?
It makes more, it's relative. You know, the ROGD cases, the ROGD cases.
Okay. So like
the ROGD cases 30 years ago would not, if we could take one of these girls, say, in a time machine 30 years ago, if we could have before they developed ROGD, they would not mm-hmm. have developed ROGD. It's a culture-bound syndrome that somehow, well, I think we have an idea how, results in this stated belief that they are trans and that they want to be boys. Jazz okay. Jennings, no matter yeah. what culture, you take her in any time machine, you know, 50,000 years ago, she would have been... very feminine. And you take an autogynephilic male, you take them in a time machine, they're going to be really aroused by the idea of being female. So that's an important difference. And, you know, your very careful with the words and so on. And, you know, I invite you to not only criticize the way that I've used words, but help me out here.
Okay.
So
what I'm reacting to is being feminine and cutting your penis off, to me, are worlds apart. So I've got no issue with somebody who's just like, yeah, I'm feminine. We don't call women feminine. The word feminine already means that you're a boy. It means you are a boy who seems or feels or acts like a girl. Mm-hmm. Just feminine already covers everything here. Oh. Trans seems to be a medical foundation lying word where you're actually saying it to place a building block so that you can convince someone to cut off your penis or convince someone to give you estrogen. That it feels like a strategic word.
I think that's a really good point. I think I agree with you.
So I almost want to stop using it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think in support of what you're saying, there are different cultures that have very similar phenomena, but without, I think, with the word trans and without the
chopping
medicalization of trans.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm good friends with Paul Vasey, who's a scientist who spends a lot of his time in Samoa, and there's a type of person there called the Fafafina, which Fafafina is Samoan for in the manner of a woman. So these are natal males.
Yeah.
And they're identified in childhood as being extremely feminine. And they grow up much of the time. They grow their hair long, they cross dress.
That's great. I think that's terrific.
But they don't get sex changes, at least they haven't. I think that may be changing because they're being westernized and so on. I think this idea of surgery, I do think it is, and medical treatment, I do think that's kind of a Western idea of the past, you know, 100 years or so.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's maybe it's not a good idea, but I will say, so autogynephiles really, really do, some of them want female genitalia. It's what they want. And, you know, what do you think about that?
I want all kinds of stuff I don't have.
Yeah, but
you
but,
can't have it. You can't actually have what, it. Like getting certain.
You're going to say they can't have it?
Somebody will
give them surgery.
But it's not actually female genitalia. It's not what you're getting.
It's a facsimile,
you're getting
male.
Yes, trust me.
Yeah.
Having a body part is a lot different from having a sculpture of a body part.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So it's not like you can get like you can wear a wig and it'll basically serve the same purpose as hair. You can get fake contact lenses and they work just your irises will work pretty much just the same. But a vagina is not like that. We don't have the technology to give you an actual vagina. So that's not what you're getting.
I agree with you. I think that many of them who want one know that. They know what they'll get. They know the limitations.
Okay. Well, so then I want a vagina. I want something that makes other people think I have a vagina. And I'm willing to give up my penis to have that? No. just my friend who's a content creator, we talk about this every couple months or so, and we always come to like just jack off. you know, like a fucking normal person. You get aroused, you have a fantasy, your fantasy makes no sense and is disgusting and weird, you're really excited, it seems like a really good idea, and then you orgasm, and then you fucking move on with your day. And it's like, you don't have to move into your sexual fantasy and have that become your entire fucking life.
Yeah. I think that you're... Your reaction there is, I think it makes sense.
Just jack off.
To me, but I'm not an autogynephilic. And, you know, I know plenty of autogynephilic people. They range in what they want. I know some who've actually transitioned, and I know some who plan to transition. And, you know, I ask them, you know, like, what's the hurry? You know, because one of them is pretty young, and you know, what can I say? That's what they want. And the one that I am thinking of right now, who's a young person who has transitioned hormonally, and you know, long hair and so on, but not surgically yet. You know, I'm.
Okay.
He knows about autogynephilia, and you know.
What if somebody wants to have their nose surgically removed? They're like, you know what? I saw fucking TikTok that convinced me that noses are ugly, and I want my nose cut off. Do you think?
Change the example to something that really happens. There are some. There are some.
It's a hypothetical.
I've got one.
Okay.
There are some men who
the leg lengthening
have
surgery?
A limb amputated.
Okay.
That's a thing.
Just because they want it gone.
And it's actually very similar to autogynephilia. It's called apotemnophilia. It's
okay. And they're sexually aroused by the idea of themselves and the amputee.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. That's right.
Are you cool with
some of these men actually arrange to have accidents where they lose a limb.
Okay. What do you think that's okay?
Well,
do you think that we should be condoning that? Do you think it should be legal? Do you think it should be medically accepted by the medical scientific community and the law for a surgeon to remove a man's left hand because he finds the idea sexually arousing?
I think with respect to both limb amputation of healthy limbs for this reason, mm-hmm. and sex reassignment surgery, we should want data that people who have these procedures, these surgeries, are better off, they're happier than they
as self-reported
were before.
Because my definition of happiness don't include cutting off your dick. That's my definition of unhappiness, actually. So to me, the self-reporting doesn't matter, because that's the worst possible thing that could happen.
See, I don't guess I agree with that.
Here's a hypothetical I've asked people. What if a man says, I want to cut off both arms, both legs, and my genitals? I want to be a worm person because I find the idea arousing. Do you think that, is there any amount of self-reporting that would make you approve that procedure? If you were like a medical review board?
I don't think so.
It's just too fucking horrible. It doesn't matter if they're the happiest worm person in the world. You're saying, you know what? You don't know what you want, and you can't have the wormectomy.
Yeah.
Okay. So where do you draw the line? Because you're saying, to me, you're saying more data, which sounds, you know what's going to happen if you say that, is that there's going to be a new word, a new spot on the pride flag for people who want to cut their arms and legs off. And it's going to be a little island, and it's like a disease. It's going to be like Wuhan, and you're going to be like, oh, that's kind of weird. And then within 2 years, President Biden is going to be saying, and worm people are worms.
Yeah. I don't
know
about the,
Okay.
Or people, but you know, there are people who actually want to be paraplegics. So
yeah.
you're not that far off, I guess.
Yeah, but you leave. But when you say we need more data,
yeah,
it feels like you're leaving the door open to those people to just find a way to wriggle through.
Yeah. Well, so I don't know that there are worm people, and gosh, the amputee candidates, the people who want to lose a limb.
Mm.
I am inclined to think, to consider that maybe they should get it. There has been one study supporting that they are better off, at least by self-report, and they don't, you know, they don't want to have yet another limb. And these people, they've had these issues for years and years and years. It's not like, unlike with ROGD, it's not like something that just came up last week.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I watched your podcast with Chris Williamson.
Yeah.
And at the end, he was saying that there's a whole laundry list of things he didn't get to ask you about. And he wanted to ask you about virtuous pedophiles.
Yeah.
Can we take a detour, a pedophile detour?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. What do you think about virtuous pedophiles? Are we talking about the concept or the organization?
Well, let's distinguish. So Virtuous Pedophiles is an organization.
Yeah.
That is intended for pedophiles, people who are attracted to children, but who are committed never to touching children sexually.
What about child self? I've spoken to them.
Yeah, I have too.
Okay. What about consuming CSAM?
Are you talking about child pornography? Is that what?
Yes, child pornography.
Yeah. So, I think that Virtuous Pedophiles does not support viewing child pornography.
Okay.
It's.
The commitment probably is not as firm.
I think that it's clearly much more problematic for somebody to touch a live child sexually than mm-hmm. to view images or videos that somebody else made a long time ago that was on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
The people I know who are virtuous pedophiles, all of the ones I've talked to don't wish to view child pornography. Also, you know, talk about a way to ruin your life, touching a child or getting caught with child pornography is a way to ruin your life. And
but people will risk ruining their lives for sex.
Yeah, I know.
All kinds of people.
I think they're less likely to be members of Virtuous Pedophiles. So I think that Virtuous Pedophiles is a very useful organization because part of what they do is try to provide examples of how to live a good life.
Without sexual fulfillment.
Without sexual...
Just jack off. Folks, we're right back where we started. Just jack off.
Yeah.
Right? Think about whatever you want and just jack off. I'm sure they don't say it, but virtuous...
I'm sure that I'm sure they fantasize about children and they don't feel like that is committing harm because there's no live children in the room. And I believe there's not even images of children in the room, or at least illegal images. So, yes, I think that that's what...
Stick figure drawings.
I don't know. But...
Man, I just had a good idea for an art project.
Yeah.
You draw a bunch of stick figures with boners. and then during the show, the audience is there. You come in and you label them all. This one is 8 years old. This one is 10 years. And then you're like, you're all trapped in here looking at child porn now. Okay. Here's what I'm laying out here. A pedophile, somebody with an intense fixation, almost a belief system, that they will do anything to satisfy their sexual urge. Some of them go to jail, ruin their lives. They're all on the precipice because a sexual fixation. That's why we're scared of pedophiles, because we all know what it's like to have a sexual fixation to some degree. And we know how powerful it is. So we know when somebody says, like, oh, I can control it. We're like, well, I can't control mine. It just happens to not involve children. So I don't know if you can control yours. So but virtuous pedophiles and society at large tells these people, just don't do it. We'll find another way. Don't do it. And my belief is that you have a social contract with the rest of us to not carve yourself up. That suicide is not legal, and it shouldn't be. If you take a knife and you start cutting you go out on the street and cut your own ear off, somebody will take your knife away and put you in a room and say, and make it so you can't do that anymore. And I think that's good. If you go out on the street and cut your hand off, someone will stop you from doing that and say, you're not allowed to do that, put you in a room and make it so you can't do it. But now we're saying, if you can keep it up, you can keep up the act long enough. If you can sit there with a straight face and say, no, 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 I've thought it through and I want to hack all my body parts off, then somehow you get put into a new legitimized category that's different from the crazy schizophrenic person saying, Martians put tracking implants in my nose, so I have to cut it off right now. But to me, it's the same thing. And I understand it's not literally the same thing. What I'm saying is, it's the same level of self-mutilation that should be prevented. And for some reason, we're okay with saying, okay, you shouldn't harm a child because it will sexually satisfy you. But what we are okay with saying, you can harm yourself if it sexually satisfies you. And I think we should not do that. That's my pitch.
Well, I think I understand your pitch. I think that was, probably before 50 years ago, that was what almost everybody believed.
Yeah.
And that's changed. I guess
you don't believe it. I'm pitching it to you.
I think about it in terms of costs and benefits, and
But if a fucking crazy person is the person defining the benefits, then why does that? I guess I just don't understand why it means anything to you.
I don't think they're crazy in the way that a schizophrenic is crazy. I think that they have comprehensible motivations that are not satisfied in some cases by just masturbating. You know, they have this strong desire for some kind of surgery or some kind of procedure
that you believe should be satisfied.
Again, it is costs and benefits. So, if, for example, we believe so. I understand there are costs, clearly. And sometimes, for example, especially autogynephilic transsexuals, they will have married, had children, they'll want to leave their families, or, they'll often want to stay with their families, but their families don't really want to be part of it. And become women. Or trans women,
Deirdre McCloskey.
That's a cost.
I interviewed Deirdre McCloskey.
Yeah, she's a big fan of mine.
I know. She mentioned you.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's one, and she did that, you know, with her family, to her family, however you want to talk about it. Her favorite phrase is, she wants what she wants, or she wanted what she wanted.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would be better if people weren't in the position to do that, because they'd already done it before they formed a family. But so your solution to work, I think it would require outlawing trans, or let's say gender,
ban it all.
Yeah. How about cross-dressing? You want to ban that too?
No, I don't. The justification for banning what I would call self-harm or self-mutilation is that it hurts other people. That's it. That's why suicide is illegal, because it upsets us. We don't want you to do it because we don't like how it makes us feel. Same thing with drugs. We don't want you to do drugs because it makes us feel bad when you do drugs. And so it's the same as this. Why would I, like, I know a lot of drugs are decriminalized in places, and I think that's great. I don't think people should go to jail for it. But, like, do I want the government letting you, like, shoot up heroin or doing meth? No. I want the government to stop you from doing that. Why would I want the government to stop you from doing that, but you can shoot up estrogen and cut your own balls off? No.
How does that hurt other people?
Because it's upsetting. Hmm. It's horrifying.
You know, 70 years ago, the prospect of white people and black people marrying each other
were upsetting and horrifying. That's true. So you have to test. Okay, so then we get into costs and benefits, right? And self-reporting. How does it feel to be a black person who's not allowed to drink out of the same drinking fountain as a white person? It feels bad. And is a black person crazy for feeling that way? No. All of us know that nobody wants to be treated like that. So I think that the comparison falls apart there, because trans people are doing things to their own bodies that most of us would give every last cent in our bank account and sign up for a life of indentured servitude. I would rather be a slave than cut my dick off. I would rather be a literal slave in chattel slavery than have that happen to me. So I think the comparison falls apart when you say, okay, how does a reasonable person react to the thing that you want? And if the thing you want is to use the same bathroom as everybody else, then I think it makes sense to say, okay, well, then yeah, we have to, like, get over it. And the same thing here is, like, we have two groups of people. One group is 98% or 99 or 99.9% of people who find the idea of genital mutilation fucking horrifying. And then we have 0.0001% who can't stop thinking about it. So it's like, for me, it's like giving anorexic people liposuction. They want it. They want it. They want to get thinner. Even if they're going to die, they want it. And at some point we just put them in a hospital and we hook them up to a feeding tube and we say, fuck you. No, you can't do it. You can't live here and be part of our society and have us, you want us to drive the speed limit when we're going through your neighborhood? Do you want us to, you want the cops to not shoot you? You want to be read your rights? You want a jury of your peers giving you a fair trial? Then in exchange for that, you can't cut your own penis off. or you can't expect us to let you, and you can't expect us to help you. It just feels like it breaks the contract.
Well, the thing is, the people who want this, the trans people who want it, are not like everybody else.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure that they're not like everybody else, and also they have this, the ones that I would, you know, approve of surgery for, say, they have been like this for many years without it changing. And there's,
well, life, yeah, life sucks. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, you know,
it's the same thing I would tell a pedophile. Life sucks. Yes, you're going to spend your whole life fantasizing about something that you can't have.
Yeah.
Me too. So am I. Most of us are.
Yeah.
And am I fantasizing about something I can't have? That's true of almost everybody. And then how intense is my fantasy?
Right.
And so that's the thing that I think is different about trans people, is that the fantasy is so overpoweringly intense that it's a compulsion that they will sacrifice their own families to have it. And so to me, that's the thing that's different about trans people. Not the focus. It's like a sex act.
Normal men sacrifice their families for
sex.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they get divorced for another woman or something like that. So I think it's analogous to that. Autogynephilia is, anyway, at least autogynephilic transition in the context of a marriage is, I think, very similar to that. It is true that until fairly recent, I keep saying 50 years ago, I don't know exactly when it was, but maybe it was long. That people, this was unavailable because, you know, just nobody did it. You know, I mean, that we didn't have doctors who knew how or provided the interventions, the medical interventions that people want. And, you know, I don't think people killed themselves because it was unavailable. At least I am unaware of case histories. So,
yeah, advocacy.
This is consistent that, with your argument
that they won't kill themselves.
Maybe not. I mean, thing is,
I don't think they will.
Now things have changed. It's out, you know, and it is available. I don't know how to put it back. And again, I'm not yet convinced that
it should be put back
like you, but I understand your point. And, you know, I think, you're raising challenging ideas that,
you know, what's fucked up. You know what's stupid about trans advocacy that you just made me realize? Why should I give a shit if you kill yourself? Well, because I'm just supposed to. I'm supposed to care about your body and what you do to it. But that's the same reason I don't want you to transition medically. Because I care about your body and I'm invested in what you do to it. But when I'm being a patriarchal, controlling, draconian asshole, but when it comes to killing yourself, then I'm supposed to care and want to change the rules to accommodate you. And so that just feels like the argument, the threat, it does feel like a threat of like, let me have this or I'll kill myself.
Oh, yeah,
or we'll all kill ourselves. It's inherently undermines itself, because if we care that you kill yourself, then that's the same reason we don't want you to get this surgery.
Yeah.
Okay, I got another quote from your article.
Okay.
It's related to what we're saying. A new development in the history of gender dysphoria has been the formation of internet communities of concerned parents. These communities appear to be centered around the two opposing viewpoints we have described. Some of these communities comprise parents concerned that their AYA, that's adolescent or young adult, or children, have ROGD and are pursuing gender transition unnecessarily. So the concept of gender transition sometimes being necessary is laid into the foundation of your analysis. And I completely disagree that it is ever necessary, but I want the paper to define if it's going to run these statistical tests and then come to conclusions about necessary versus unnecessary transition. I want a definition of where, how are you defining necessary?
Yeah. I think we're using that terminology because many people do think it is necessary, and
but by using the terminology, you're buying into it.
I think that we're just
like if I said like to, oh, this group is on
yeah.
If I said this group is unnecessarily doing child sacrifice, or the, you know what I mean? An unnecessary rain dance to bring about the monsoon. It implies that I believe that there might be a necessary rain dance to bring about the monsoon.
Yeah. It would be, it would have been a very different paper if we had just said, you know, we're defending the idea that all trans, all gender transition, medical gender transition is wrong and nobody should do it. If we were trying to, you know, and the parents actually, the parents in our sample, I think many of them would have had their gender dysphoric children had a more typical
They would have supported it. Okay, but you're saying you're not making that argument. You're not saying it's all unnecessary. You're saying some of, you're saying ROGD trans people shouldn't transition. So I want to know how you're defining necessary then. If you're saying these are trans people who do not need to transition, how do you define that?
Well, I, you know, I'm not sure that we were saying that.
Well, you,
I know how we talked about it. I'm just saying, Michael,
pursuing gender transition unnecessarily. Those are, you type those words out.
Well, I think you can think that some people are pursuing gender transition unnecessarily without getting into what necessary is. So if somebody said, for example, you know, it's Thursday, and Thursday, because it's Thursday, I want to
cut off my breasts.
Then I think, you know, you could get in, you could say that seems unnecessary. That's
no, because the, in that example, the listener or reader knows that compared to, I believe I am a woman and, or I believe I'm a man and it's Thursday, that the reader doesn't need to explain to them. It's already accepted and understood. Yeah. You don't have to explain that. But in this case, when the paper is literally about how these girls think they need to transition but are wrong, I think you do need to define what it means for them to be wrong. I don't think you can just not explain that.
So the many people think that these ROGD girls, because they're mostly, maybe all girls, because mm-hmm. the adolescent boys maybe
yes.
autogynephilic. It's hard to know.
Yeah. The Littman Schreier.
People think that they're going to have a high regret rate.
Okay.
They're also.
Okay, so that's how you're defining necessary, is the regret rate.
Unnecessary.
Oh, yeah, necessary versus the dividing line. Because, again, your paper is, the point of your paper, I believe, is not to say we discovered a new type of trans person. It's to say that these ROGD girls are not actually trans. They don't need to transition. They'll be better off if they don't.
I don't.
Okay, it's to say there's some evidence to suggest that might be true and further research is needed.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a beginning effort. You know,
okay, but you
second
but
paper.
When,
and, yeah.
But when
I,
you say,
you know, I believe more things that are in the paper, so you can ask me about what I believe.
Well, no, I wanted to talk about the text, because some of these communities comprise parents concerned that their AYA children have ROGD and are pursuing gender transition unnecessarily. That makes it sound like the premise of the paper is that if you have ROGD, you don't need to transition.
Well, that's what the parents think, right? It's also what I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then if you...
I don't think that's what the paper is about.
Well, if you're...
That's describing what the parents' motivation, why the parents have these communities.
The only reason the only reason the parents are going to this website is because they are trying to figure out what to do with their daughters. And what they're trying to figure out is whether the daughter should transition or not, or they want ammunition for standing up to the doctor, the gender therapist, or whatever. They want either support with saying no, or they want to know whether they should say no. That is my view of why people would go to this website. And my view of why people would read this paper, or why you publish the paper, is to cast your kind of scientific vote in, is this social contagion, or are they really trans? And so if the reader is reading this and they don't already agree with you, then I believe you then have to address the defining line between a real trans person and a mistaken trans person, someone who has ROGD and doesn't need to transition, or someone who does need to transition. And you've alluded to the regret rate, and I think you allude to it in the paper too.
Yeah, but I disagree that we need to do that. That's really not what the paper was about. The paper was, whether... So Lisa Lippman, who came up with the theory of ROGD, mm-hmm. Had various observations in her first paper. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to replicate some of those and extend some others. So, and we had, for example, the finding that the more, so we have parent reports of mental health issues, pre-existing mental health issues. Those were there before trans announcements were made. That I think that's, suggestive, mm-hmm. that it's not the other way around. It's not the transgender stuff causing the mental health. And also the kids who had the more diagnoses and more problems were especially likely to have socially transitioned, which is not what you'd want to see. You'd want you know, if there were responsible gatekeeping, you'd want the most together kids to be the ones who were allowed to go forward. So, you know, those are just some of the findings. The preponderance of females.
I know, but responsible gatekeeping, that term implies real versus not real trans people.
It at least requires concern that somebody whose judgment is less likely to be good has to wait longer or maybe doesn't get to go.
Okay, but this is all still going into who gets to transition and who doesn't.
Yeah, I think that the whole ROGD concept is related to. So I will just say, I forget whether I've said it right now, but okay. I say it often, and I'll say it again. I think ROGD, people with ROGD, if it exists, and I think it does, should not transition. It's a bad idea because they don't have a motivational structure such that transition is going to help them, even self-report in the long term. I think they're going to be more likely to regret it, and it's not going to solve any of their problems. Whereas I do think transition for an autogynephilic male is going to make them happier in some ways, maybe less happy in other ways.
Is it necessary for them to transition?
I don't know.
Can you tell me a situation in which transition is necessary?
I probably not. You know, I'm not a clinician, and you know, I'm not really advocating for transition.
But when you say pursuing gender transition unnecessarily.
Yeah, well, I think that our.
When is it necessary?
You're being very.
Pedantic.
Black and white here.
Yes.
Can't we think of. Even if you believe that nobody should ever transition, are you willing to think that it's more of a mistake for some people than for others?
Yes.
All right. Well, that's what we're arguing.
Okay. So then, if that is what you're arguing, then what does pursuing gender transition unnecessarily mean? Compared to, because unnecessarily means there has to be a necessary. So when is it necessary? You can't say a smaller mistake is necessary compared to a big mistake. It's necessary doesn't even begin after something is a good idea. It's still not necessary. It has to be essential. You can't say that a less bad idea is necessary.
Yeah, but I think that we were using that language more in the dimensional way that I was just talking about.
Okay.
I don't think... either Susanna, the Susanna Diaz, my co-author, or I.
The anonymous, and Susanna Diaz is a
I don't think either of
pseudonym.
Us advocating for transition. However, I think Susanna's child.
Well, I think you are.
Well.
I think you're inadvertently buying into, because like, for example, if it were a...
Yeah, I see your point.
So imagine you were doing a paper on mass shootings and you said the Las Vegas shooter killed an unnecessarily large number of people. We're looking at these other figures, we can see that, you know, some mass shooters are satisfied with 3 or 5 victims. Well, this guy killed 50. That's completely unnecessary. Obviously, there would be some blowback about the choice of that word there, because you'd be implying that sometimes you just got to kill some people. But in this case, it feels like the idea that some people have to transition is so widely accepted that, I don't know, it just seems like you're...
I think that's true. I think that the idea that some people...
But you are buying into it.
Transition is widely accepted.
But is it accepted by you?
So widely accepted, it's not what we wanted to get into, to question it in this paper.
But that is. But the paper is about defining who should and shouldn't transition. So it is what you want to get into.
No, that's not what the paper... The paper is about whether we can provide evidence for or against this cohort of rapid onset gender dysphoria. Are there, you know, there are these new...
Yes, but evidence about people, whether they should transition.
Well, there is relevant evidence in there, which is the mental health stuff, for example, and that's the most relevant.
Well, it's not just evidence. You are... we expect that parents and children's reports are more similar for families in which parents support their children's transition, although this has not been studied directly. However, this does not mean that parents who support transition are correct. What does that mean? Correct about what?
About
whether they should transition.
Yeah.
So the paper is about that. These parents and their gender dysphoric transition could both be mistaken. Mistaken about whether or not they should transition, I assume, is what that means. Especially
Actually, if... No. That part that you just read, I think it's not correct about transition. It's correct about whether their kids have ROGD.
We expect that parents and children's supports are more similar for families in which parents support their children's transition, although this has not been studied directly.
It's the correspondence between what the kid says and what the parents say. So the parents in our sample were saying...
Are evaluating.
Our kids, my kid is messed up psychologically and should not... So,
yes. And should not transition.
Yeah.
Okay. Right? That's
yeah,
what that.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
Okay. Right. And so you're saying that just because the parents' report of the child and the child self-report align, that doesn't mean the parent actually knows what's going on. They could be just as wrong about the child's mental state as the child.
But look, you know, I'm old, that my kids are grown, but if I had a young child who was gender dysphoric and neither of mine were, I wouldn't want my child to transition. However, considering the three different types, there's autogynephilic, there's child onset, and then there's ROGD. I would least want my child to transition if they were ROGD. And if they were autogynephilic, and
I understand.
So
I understand the comparative point you're making,
and that's
But when you say that does not mean parents who support children are correct. So we have correct, we have unnecessarily, and we have these parents and their gender dysphoric children could both be mistaken. So mistaken is not a comparative word. That's you're either right or you're wrong. Correct is not, these are not words about a spectrum of a bad idea to a terrible idea.
Yeah, I don't.
They invoke the concept that some people are correct to transition. And I think if the paper is about analyzing whether this cohort should be seen as fit to transition, then you need to define what fit to transition means or needs to transition. And if you want to use the regret rate, I think that's fine, but I want some numbers. I want to know what.
I have a conceptual way of thinking about this, and it is, would this person lead a happier life?
By their own standard or by yours?
It's a good question, and I think probably both should be weighed some.
Well, which one's weighed more? Or are they given equal weight?
Well, I think probably the person who, well.
Because then we're going to go back to the widow. I will bring back the worm question as many times as I need to.
Yep.
Okay.
There has to be the constraint that they are not hurting other people. And yeah, the worm question's a good one.
Okay. So we don't have a specific definition.
I mean, you know, the worm doesn't exist. But, you know, there was the guy who, in the, you know, the German
cannibal. I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah. So there was the guy.
The guy who paid somebody to eat him.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
because it was because he couldn't just jack off. He had to pay somebody to eat him. Okay. Okay, bud. Didn't hurt anybody.
Right.
And is that so? He's the happiest moment of his entire life.
You're asking very good questions.
If you're in the business of I'm supportive of what you do, and I hate to make this argument on the behalf of the trans people who I am kind of fighting against, but I think it needs to be, the point needs to be hammered on that if you're against the German hiring somebody to eat him, which I assume you are, do you think that the government should have stopped that from happening?
Probably.
Okay, so you're against that. You're against the worm hypothetical, which you don't even want to talk about the worm hypothetical. That's how much you're against it. But you are okay with some people transitioning. And we've got these ROGD people, and you're trying to say that you know, your daughter's more like this fucking German weirdo. Then, well, in terms of not in terms of severity, but that the trade-off is not worth it. That no matter how sexually gratifying you find being eaten, you're not allowed to do it, I think is your point, and I agree. Then if you're talking about placing these teen girls somewhere on this line of the trade-off not being worth it and the trade-off being worth it, I need a cutoff point and a metric or multiple metrics by which you're making that distinction.
So,
because if you leave again, it ambiguous, then that all these girls need to do is
they go
to Planned Parenthood.
To the continuum. And you know, I have recently been arguing.
No, I know it's a continuum, but you're saying, but transition, transition, the decision to transition is binary.
I have recently been questioning the transition of people like Jazz Jennings, a discussion group of a bunch of experts. I've been raising, I've been using my question with Jazz had been happier staying. Jaren, I think.
Who
was
fucking
Jazz.
Cares? Who
I, cares? I think Jazz might have been happier staying a boy.
By my definition,
and I do
for
think
sure.
It matters.
happy. You can't spell happiness without penis. Okay, here's. I'm going to use a visual aid to describe my issue. Here's ROGD girls. And there's a spectrum of appropriate to inappropriate to transition, and your paper is locating them somewhere on the spectrum. But you're locating them with respect to, I think, a cutoff line of what it means to be appropriate. But I get where you're saying this is, but I don't get where the cutoff line is. So we could, you know what I'm saying?
I don't know where a cutoff line would be either.
Okay.
But I'm telling you about how I think about it.
These
but
again, girls are on the wrong side of it.
I'm not a clinician. I don't, I neither, you know, treat people to promote gender transition or to prevent it. I just study it.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm studying now RGD.
Well, you're not just studying it. You are presenting arguments.
I'm saying ROGD is relatively problematic with respect to...
You're saying that now.
That's what I didn't have to say it because I was writing not for you, but for the world where most people think it's obvious that some people should transition.
Most people think it's obvious that some people should transition, but if you're describing a cohort of people who you think should not transition, should you not then define the difference between that cohort and the other cohorts which you think should transition?
Well, I think that that's part of the study. You know, the adolescent onset, the predominance of girls and adolescents, that's not a thing with the other types.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the sorry, I don't just mean describe the qualitative differences. I mean describe the difference that makes it inappropriate for one group to transition. Define why it is inappropriate for one group to transition. I understand you have the lack of childhood history, the sudden onset. These things indicate that it may be inappropriate to transition, but if I don't know what appropriate to transition even means, and if you're saying in the paper, you're saying sometimes people should transition, and right now you're telling me sometimes people should transition, but then when I ask you when is it necessary to transition, and you say, I don't know, and I say, can you describe any situation which is necessary to transition, you say, I don't know. So are you saying it's a medically unnecessary operation where a person gets their genitals removed, but it's not necessary?
It is not
it's an essential
question to what I have been engaged in.
I think it is. I think it absolutely is, Michael.
I know you do, and I'm gonna. You've made me think, and I'll continue to think.
Okay,
but it hasn't been.
Okay.
Back when there was a responsible approach to this, maybe not by your lights, but much more than it is now, at the gender clinic at what used to be the Clark Institute of Psychiatry, where Ray Blanchard was the head, people would have to be engaged in therapy. They would have to live 2 years.
Yeah.
They would have to do the real life test where they would have to live in the clothing and the identity of the other sex.
Mm-hmm.
They would have to be mentally sane other than their desire.
Just that one little thing.
Their gender dysphoria.
Yeah.
So,
but those are, that's like kind of testing for counterindications.
Right.
But that's, it's not, that's but it doesn't test for necessary. I understand it, but it doesn't get us to necessary.
Yeah. I understand your point.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
I'm looking forward to showing this video to my young autogynephilic friend to see what she thinks, to see what she will argue.
Just jack off.
Yeah.
Okay. Just jack off. Trust me. Because I've had a sexual, I don't want to get too personal, but I've had sexual fixations before. So I know what it's like to have an overpowering, all-consuming desire to do some sex act or fetish thing. And I have allowed it to take over my life at times. And I should have just jacked off.
Yeah. So I do want to say I'm not autogynephilic, so I can't really understand. But I do know that some autogynephilic persons who I highly respect insist that it's not just an overwhelming sexual feeling, but it is something that causes changes to the identity. And also, you know, so a straight man doesn't just want to have sex with women. He falls in love with women.
Mm-hmm.
He develops attachment to women.
It's not just about...
Ostensibly, I've read an excellent paper about it, an analogous process among autogynephilic persons where they develop this attachment to their female self. And, you know, transition cements that in a way that is satisfying to some of them. At least that's what I've read. And again, I'm not autogynephilic. I can't evaluate it. But, you know, I do understand romantic attachment, and it is nice and important. And
It's I get what you're pushing back against the idea that jacking off can fill that hole or void or meet that need, because it can't, it doesn't have the emotional impact.
At least for some people.
Yeah, well, for me it doesn't. But
I think some autogynephilic people, it is just a strong sexual urge. And
That seems like about control. It's a woman who will do everything you want because you are her. That's the ultimate control, is piloting the woman's body, the object of your desire, with your brain directly. I think they're just scared.
Yeah.
It's scary to have sex with a woman who you don't know what she's going to do. She's moving around, talking and stuff. You don't know what she's going to do or say. I can understand that.
I don't know what it's like because I'm not autogynephilic. Yeah, it's a very strange thing to me still. I have autogynephilic friends. I've talked a lot, and you know, I've written part of a book about autogynephilia, and it's still just so unusual to me. I can't really understand it. So, Max, I'm going to have to teach soon, we should wrap it up. But then we can talk a little more if you want. But I do, before we end, I do want to compliment you in that this was a very interesting experience. You are very thoughtful and challenging, and I like discussions like this. And, you know, I will continue to think, and maybe I will shoot you an email or something about as I have further thoughts.
That's great to hear. I appreciate you saying that, and I've also enjoyed the conversation and find you thoughtful and engaging as well. And I appreciate your work. And if you do send me an email, I will I'll let my audience know about, you know, if you give me permission.
I'm definitely gonna, once I can show this or send a link, I'm definitely gonna get opinions from my trans acquaintances.
Yeah.
We will have it.
You know, I have a decent number of trans fans. So they even when I'm saying to them, like, the government should stop you from doing what you want, they've I think because I'm not, like, hateful or too demeaning.
Well, also, you know, trans persons vary a lot in how reasonable they are. And, you know, they can think you're worth listening to, even if they don't agree with everything you say.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so should we wrap it up, or do you
We should wrap it up, unless you want to, you know, say one more thing or ask one more question or whatever.
Okay. Segem. SEGM.
Yeah.
The Society, what is it? Society for Evidence-Based Gender Medicine.
Yeah.
They gave you money for this paper. They funded the study.
They funded the publication so that it was open access, which means that everybody can read it, not just academics whose libraries have a subscription. And it turned out to be a really great thing, because even after retraction, we're going to be able to republish it wherever we want.
Can I ask how much funding that was?
That, I believe, is around $3,000.
Okay.
Which is a lot of money. my opinion. Yeah.
It's it is a lot of money. Okay, I have one other quote. Unless you wish to just stop now.
Go ahead.
One statistically robust finding was both disturbing and seemingly important. Youths with a history of mental health issues were especially likely to have taken steps to socially and medically transition. This relationship held even after statistically adjusting for likely confounders like age. The finding is concerning because youth with mental health issues may be especially likely to lack judgment necessary to make these important, and in the case of medical transition, permanent decisions. My question is, youth with mental health issues may be especially likely to lack judgment necessary. Can you describe what the necessary judgment a teenager?
All right, Max. This is just another version of the same thing we spent quite a bit of time discussing.
That's fair. If you don't want to respond for that reason, I can respect that. Okay.
So let's end. And thanks again.
Wait.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way: is there any 15-year-old girl who you think does have the judgment to get a double mastectomy?
No, I don't think so.
So, mental health issues are.
I don't support medical transition for non-adults.
Okay, so when you say youth with mental health issues may be likely to lack judgment necessary to make these important medical transition decisions, you don't believe any youth have the judgment necessary to do that?
Well, actually, that's not true.
Okay.
I think that, for example, there are some, you know, we don't let people below a certain age drive, and I think that's for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Quite possibly some 14-year-olds could be excellent drivers, but we, you know, have to make these rules and so on. And
but broadly, you don't believe that the average 15-year-old, healthy or not, has the capacity to make this decision?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, in terms of adults, you know, they have the right. So I don't really have to, if transition is offered, and it's legal, then they have the right to decide to do it. So it's really not, again, something that we were concerned with.
Okay. You know, since I started the podcast, I've probably talked to like 20 academics.
Yeah.
And about, I would say 40% of them just leave like angry, really angry. And are like, they get very snippy and kind of mean.
You know, I can see why, but it was
you could see why someone would leave.
Well, no, because you know, you're very challenging and confrontational, but you're also very thoughtful, and I'm an argumentative guy. You know, I think that's good. It's not because I'm angry. It's because arguing about things is a way to proceed toward truth and knowledge and higher understanding.
Yeah, to turn it over and look at the different angles.
Yeah. No, I like I said, I enjoyed our discussion. And I said, you know, I've been on lots of podcasts. This is very unlike other podcasts I've been on, and I enjoyed it. And you're very thoughtful. You're an interesting guy.
Thank you.
I really haven't known much about you, but now
I'm mostly at this point. I'm a rapper.
Finding out.
I'm a rapper.
Yeah.
That's my main.
Are you serious?
My main source of income right now is rap.
Send me a link, please.
I will. My number one song is called "I Can Fantasize About Whatever I Want."
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'll email that to you and let me know if you got a follow up. And thanks so much for coming. So I'll end the Zoom call and let's stay in touch.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, Michael. All right. Bye.